Hello, everyone. Welcome to Just Getting By, episode 31, for Monday, the 17th of October, 2011. My name is Craig Jones, and I am joined, as always, by Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Howdy, Craig.
How are you doing today?
Exasperated.
Why are you exasperated?
Skype sucks.
Skype does suck. Ladies and gentlemen, not like we're recording live or anything. We're not, so none of you care about this. This is very inside baseball. Only two people on this planet care about this. But we're 22 minutes over when we usually start recording, because Skype is just terrible. Awful. Very, very bad. This is a good... Chemslave, this is a good question for the audience. Anybody who can think of a reason why Chemslave sounds many orders of magnitude better on one router than he does on another router in his home, please email us at feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com.
Oh, God.
No, I'm not joking. If anybody listening to this, and quite frankly, anybody listening to this probably has a significant technical background. If you can think of a reason why Chemslave's call quality is through the roof in a good way on one router and just in the toilet, just terrible, on another, please give us an email. Again, the email address is feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. So, Chemslave.
Yes?
It's been a busy week, hasn't it?
Yeah, very busy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have an interesting story to start off with today. It is not a story that bodes well for President Obama, whom, by the way, all of our regular audience members know that you and I just love him. We are his biggest fans, aren't we?
Yep.
Yep.
I love the guy.
Yep.
I voted for him.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. How do you feel about that now, buddy?
It was a choice between the lesser of two evils.
I don't believe that for a second, and neither do you.
Yeah.
Do you really believe that John McCain would have been as bad a president as Barack Obama has been?
I think he would be bad just in a different way. He's still a politician, and politicians are always out there to get you.
To a certain extent, you're right, I guess. It's a moot point now, anyway. Yeah, well, I'm being sarcastic. We both cannot stand Obama. He's a disgrace to the presidency. And you know who almost agrees with that statement?
Oh.
Do you know who Mortimer Zuckerman is?
No, but I love the first name.
Mortimer.
Yeah. It's so awesome.
Like an evil scientist kind of name, Mortimer. Like,
yep, Morty.
Yeah. Well, he calls himself Mort. No one calls him Mortimer. It's just proper to do the full name when you're introducing somebody in an article. But they call him Mort Zuckerman. He is a billionaire real estate mogul. But he is most famous, I think, for owning the U.S. News and World Report. Have you ever read that?
Nope.
It's a kind of Newsweek-ish magazine. Do you know about Newsweek? Do you know Newsweek?
Yes.
Yeah. Zuckerman himself is a Democrat and a very open Democrat. But the magazine itself has traditionally taken a slightly conservative tone in terms of national debate. It's not a conservative magazine by any stretch of the imagination, don't get me wrong. But it's not liberal like the owner himself is. But Zuckerman is a very famous liberal Democrat in America. Obviously very powerful, he's very wealthy, he can donate to whoever he wishes, and through direct donations and donations to political action committees and various other organizations. He can give an almost unlimited amount of money to candidates and the Democrat Party. He is a very important man in Democrat politics. And he supported Barack Obama for the presidency in 2008. And it sounds like he might be regretting that.
And, oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. In an interview done by the Wall Street Journal, we have a link to it in the show notes. By the way, as of right now, this is not an article that is blocked by the Wall Street Journal paywall. But if in the future it is blocked by the paywall, if you do a search through Google and then link, try to find a link through Google, you should be able to get around that. Just for future reference, if you wanted to go to our show notes at justgettingbypodcast.com and look at this story, if you couldn't do it because of a paywall, you may want to try it through Google. ChemSlave, did you just die? What the hell just happened?
I'm on fire. They're firing at me, dude. I'm going to die.
It sounds like it. It sounds like something hit your house.
The town I live in is having a football game, and they decided to shoot fireworks. I'm guessing every time there's a touchdown or something.
It sounds like the football game is coming increasingly nearer to your house.
Truthfully, even though I'm in a village next to this town I live in, the stadium is pretty close by, because I just have to walk through a little wooded area, and I get to be behind the stadium. So I sometimes can, like, if I listen clearly, like, really, like, just quiet everything out and just listen, I can actually understand what they're saying at the stadium.
Like the announcer?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty damn close. All right, so... if you hear banging and crashing, it's not ChemSlave being mugged. There's just fireworks going on, so just bear with us. Now, as I was saying, in an interview conducted by the Wall Street Journal, Mort Zuckerman is very, very down on President Obama. As a matter of fact, they open up with a quote from Zuckerman. He says, quote, "It's as if he doesn't like people." I mean, that is not a good way to start off an interview. It's not a very auspicious start for the president.
Well, he's like me then. I don't like people either.
Yeah, no, but you're not an asshole. Not what? Usually.
Gee, thanks.
Anytime. But Obama, on the other hand, he lives and breathes and craps asshole. Anyway, I'm getting down a rat hole. It's as if he doesn't like people. That is the keystone of this whole article. It's no surprise it's at the top. Because Zuckerman doesn't dislike Obama himself. I'm sure he agrees with many of the policies, but his big problem is that he has been a very divisive president, and he has not worked at all to make relationships on Capitol Hill. He hasn't tried to be conciliatory towards the Republicans. He hasn't tried to be bipartisan in his plans that he proposes to the American people and to Congress. Let me give you some more quotes here. He said, for instance, quote, there is enormously widespread anxiety over the political leadership of this country. That was just recently. He wasn't talking about Bush, he's talking about Obama. The sense is that the policies of this government have failed. what they say about Barack Obama when he's not in the room, so to speak, is astonishing. By the way, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall? He's talking about Democrats, by the way, in that last sentence. What Democrats say about Obama when he's not in the room is astonishing, he says. Wouldn't you just love to hear what they say about him?
Oh, yes. They'd probably complain about the guy all the time.
Oh, I am sure they would. Now, we keep going down through this article, and I'm referring to the article a lot more because a lot more than I usually do, because this is an interview, and this is probably best consumed by reading it, but I'm trying to pull out the high-order bits, as Steve Jobs would say. Do you have music playing?
No, that's a black helicopter or something. No, it's just an airplane.
That sounds like violins. Huh.
That's an airplane.
Okay. Now, Zuckerman goes on to talk about this ridiculous Occupy Wall Street protest. And this is what he says about it. This is astonishing. He says, quote, "The door to it being the protest, by the way, was opened by the Obama administration going after the, quote, millionaires and billionaires, unquote, as if everybody is a millionaire and a billionaire and they didn't earn it. To fan that flame of populist anger, I think, is very divisive and very dangerous for this country," unquote. I mean, this sounds like Rush Limbaugh.
I wouldn't know. I don't listen to the guy.
It does sound like him. It is amazing. Absolutely amazing that this really powerful, really influential Democrat is saying these things about the Obama administration. Kemsley, what do you think about his assertion that Obama's tone the last 3 years has been too divisive?
Well, we don't even have to look 3 years. We can look, like, just, was it last month when he gave that speech about the jobs plan, where he didn't go and, like, talk to, like, the Democrats and Republicans in, like, in Congress. He just sort of stood up in front of them and said, "Hey, this is the plan. You have to do this. Pass this bill." It's like he didn't talk to people. He just wrote it or had his people write it, because he's definitely not the guy writing the damn thing. And he's like, "Here, this is the deal. Do this." There's no compromise with the guy. At least that's the way he played. You know, at least that's the way I see it, like, watching, like, any type of, like, reading anything about it or watching any, like, video about it.
Well, I think you have an absolutely valid point. He really showed his true colors when he made that speech. That was in early September. Yeah. That was about a month and a half, a little less than a month and a half ago. And, yeah, it was to pass this bill. Pass this bill right away. You've got to pass this bill right now. By the way, he said all that, and the bill wasn't even written yet, so it was impossible, for one thing. It was idiotic. But that was a pure political stunt. That was an absolute pure political stunt. Because, A, like I said, he didn't have a bill. And, B, he knew it was never going to pass. The Democrat, you know, I almost did this for the story in place of the Zuckerman article. On Tuesday, this past Tuesday, the United States Senate struck down Obama's jobs bill.
Shocking.
Who controls the Senate?
Is it the Democrats?
It is indeed the Democrats, yep. Now, what happened was Republicans were filibustering the debate, which I know you know what that means, but for the benefit of the audience, a filibuster is when a member of the Senate, you can't do this in the House, but when a member of the Senate talks and talks and talks and talks, not allowing debate to continue, and in effect stopping the bill's passage just by the virtue of the fact that they cannot move the bill through the Senate. Now,
does that mean that the Republicans are trying to screw the president by not allowing this bill to pass?
Well, that's what one would think, right? But that's not necessarily the case, because two Democrats... Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Do you know how you overcome a filibuster?
No. Enlighten me.
It takes 60 votes in the 100-member Senate to to overturn a filibuster, to end a debate on the bill. It's called a vote for cloture.
Okay.
So that's what we call a supermajority, 60 votes. The Democrats could not possibly get near that, because they only have 53, including two independents. But two Democrats voted with all the Republicans in the caucus, all 53 Republicans in the caucus, plus two Democrats, not to end debate. So the cloture vote was struck down, which effectively meant that the health, the jobs bill was dead in the Senate, because the Democrats couldn't do anything more with it. Now, to hear the media, it's the Republicans that blocked the bill. And indeed, even if those Democrats hadn't defected to the Republican side, the Republicans still would have been able to block cloture. But the fact of the matter is, two Democrats did come over, and we have some very, very liberal members of the Republican caucus. The two senators from Maine, Olympia Snow and Susan Collins, the Republican senator from Massachusetts, Scott Brown. Those are the three most liberal members. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Those are the four most liberal people of the Republican caucus in the Senate. So, if this jobs bill had been even a little bit bipartisan, even a little bit conciliatory, Obama could have easily gotten those votes, because those senators have shown a lot of independence in not voting with their more conservative brethren. So, the media says that the Republicans killed this bill, but Obama's the one that killed this bill, and Zuckerman would agree with that, I think. Because he goes on to talk about how he hasn't been making the deals necessary to get the job done. He even goes back and thinks about how America was during Ronald Reagan's presidency. Now, in the middle of Reagan's presidency, a reporter for Time magazine, where Zuckerman was at the time. Oh my God.
There's a war going on, Craig.
It sounds like somebody's knocking on your door. I swear to God. It sounds like somebody is knocking on your on the door of your house.
There's a war in Pennsylvania that most people don't know, and I'm in the middle of it.
Good for you. Do some reporting. Uploaded to justgettingbypodcast.com. Now, as I was saying, in the middle 80s, there was a hostage crisis where a journalist was taken hostage, and Zuckerman was the editor of the newspaper in question. It was still U.S. News and World Report. And he had to coordinate with the White House to see the safe release of that journalist, and eventually he was indeed released. But Zuckerman had a lot of contact with President Reagan, and he contrasts his style of leadership to Obama's style as very unfavorable to him, to Obama. For instance, let me see here. He says, quote, "I worked in the White House for the next 4 weeks after the kidnapping, virtually every day, and through that I met Reagan. Reagan surprised me. He got the point of every argument. He was decisive. And everybody loved working for him. They followed his lead because they really respected his decisiveness and instincts. I was not a Republican, and I was not an admirer of his before I knew him. And you know, Harry Truman had a wonderful definition for the presidency. He said the president has to be someone who can persuade the American people to do what they don't want to do and to like it. And that's what you get, that's what you have to do. Somebody like Reagan had that authority. He was liked so much, and he had a kind of moral authority. That's what this president has lost. Democracy does not work without the right leadership, and you can't play politics. The country has got to come to the conclusion at some point that what you're doing is just because it's not just because of an ideology of politics, but for the interest of the country. Unquote. That is an astounding broadside attack against a sitting Democrat president. Democracy does not work without the right leadership, and you can't play politics. The country has got to come to the conclusion at some point that what you're doing is not just because of an ideology or politics, but for the interests of the country. What do you think of that?
This guy has the right idea on this thing.
All right, tell me why.
Because it's like truthfully, like the whole Truman quote and stuff is like, you, like sorry, you sort of put me on the spot with this thing, but
Well, we need to get your opinion.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'll put in like this little thing, another thing. I was reading like an article like a few weeks ago. About how the country won't get any better until the current people in power, the current generation, the baby boomers, get out because they are not they don't understand compromise, that they just want my way or the highway. And this whole thing is that truthfully you have to be able to stand with people, say okay, I want to do this. How should we do this? And and not fight, ideologically, like, okay, I'm a Democrat, I have to tax the rich and give money to the poor, or Republican, we need to help the top 1%. We have to somehow go into the middle and say, okay, we should, like, maybe get rid of, like, some of these tax loopholes. Just get rid of these things that, and sort of maybe spend less, get rid of tax loopholes, and get things like in order that way instead of okay, my ideological stance is this. We need to do this. Period. There's no compromise in that. There's no way to change anything in that other than making things worse.
No, you're right. And I Zuckerman actually brings up that exact point. This is another quote from the article. This is not a quote from Zuckerman himself, but this is a paraphrasing of what he said. This is a quote from the person who wrote the article, James Freeman. I just need to find it again. Mr. Zuckerman sees a need for a cooperative effort like that of President Ronald Reagan and House Speaker Tip O'Neill, a Democrat, by the way, when they reformed Social Security in 1983. This wasn't a permanent solution, of course, as Social Security needs more significant changes now, but Mr. Zuckerman sees it as a model for bipartisan progress. For those of you that don't know, in the middle 80s, Reagan and a very powerful Democrat Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, negotiated what was at the time one of the biggest political bargains of all time. these two, one very liberal, one very conservative, were able to meet and really accomplish broad, sweeping, needed, necessary change. And it worked. For over 30 years, it worked. So that that is a positive model, and that he Zuckerman does not feel has been emulated by the Obama administration. So this is a really interesting read, and I highly, highly recommend that anybody listening to this go to justgettingbypodcast.com and find the link for today's show, episode 31, and look at this article, because it is a fascinating read. It's a long one, but it's fascinating. Do you have anything else to add about this, Chemslave?
No.
Let's move on to your news story.
Oh, you're going to love this. Love it, and if you mean love as in hate, but, well, now there's a new ADHD guideline. ADHD, if for those few who don't know, is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And they have now said that you can diagnose it in children as young as 4 and as old as 18. So, Big Pharma has decided that 4-year-olds now can also have ADHD and need to be medicated to be calmer, because no young child should be have energy. Should just sit in the corner, read books, and be very, very calm. Because the childhood is not a childhood unless the child is an adult.
You know, Chemslave, I'm going to say something. And it's going to be highly controversial. I hope you'll indulge me for a second. I don't believe that ADHD exists. In fact, I don't believe that ADD, which is attention deficit disorder minus hyperactivity, I don't believe that exists either. I don't believe any of this exists. I think it's just all a convenient way to drug up the kid who doesn't know how to behave, and, you know, push the issue down through life. Let him deal with it later on. Or her. Typically it's a him. This is a very sexist thing, by the way. Girls don't get ADD or ADHD. Only boys.
Yes, because we're rambunctious. We want to have fun. We want to run around, do stuff. That's
right.
A bad thing.
Yeah,
parents can't deal with that.
50 years ago, we would have been allowed to. Or if we got too rowdy, we would have gotten a crack on the behind. Today, they drug us up so that we're not as big a nuisance. And parents don't have to work as hard. And teachers don't have to work. You know, this is... We talked a lot about education last week. But this is an education-driven illness or disorder. This is almost entirely a construct of the educational system. Because teachers nowadays have no idea how to retain the attention of their students, especially elementary school-aged students. Kids that are already prone to have their attention wander are called ADHD. All kids at a certain age, elementary school age, preschool age, are easily distracted. It's just a part of growing up. It's a part of the developmental process. That's a part of being a young, developing child. And for those students that tend to daydream more than others, or tend to run a little bit quicker than others at a little bit less opportune times, they're just called ADHD or ADD kids. They're drugged up so that a bad teacher doesn't have to worry about it, or a lazy teacher doesn't have to worry about it, or a lazy parent doesn't have to worry about it.
See, I'm very happy that I had the teachers that I did. Because I was a the typical kid that should if I had bad teachers would have had notes sent to parents saying that I might have ADD or more specifically ADHD, because I was really hyperactive. I was always getting in trouble, especially like in kindergarten. I was just running around all over the place, always in trouble. Had to sit in the quote unquote thinking chair. Like, it was almost my permanent seat. I'm shocked that I didn't, that none of my teachers went to my parents and say, hey, your kid might have ADHD. No, I had slightly older teachers who understood that kids need to run around sometimes. They need to let loose that energy. Because if you're just going to drug a kid up, you're screwing them over.
That's right.
He doesn't get to experience a full childhood. He just sits there and drugged up all the time.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely. And this is one of the travesties of modern, late 20th century education.
I have a quote from an article from the Daily Kos. I know.
Oh, my God.
But it is.
You're killing me.
Okay. But it is about ADHD.
All right.
And I think they're talking to some doctor. And it's like, it is a quick fix for them and requires less interaction. They are busy, but are usually working and very important. The parents, of course. And a pill is the easiest solution. A pathology answers the question, why is my kid requiring attention from me? Oh, he's sick. Sick society. The parents prefer to drug their kids because they don't want to deal with it because they're both very important and they need to deal with the job because the job has this super importance in their life. So here, Ritalin or Adderall, whatever the new drug is to drug these kids up with.
I'm surprised that was on the Daily Kos. Coast, or however the hell you say it, this whole idea of drugging up the kids is a liberal idea.
Yes,
conservatives do not support this. True conservatives don't believe this. Now you have sellouts, and you have like people who are just as big in the up the asses of big pharma as Democrats and liberals. But real conservatives do not believe in drugging up the kids. That's just not how it's done. And I'm surprised that story was on the Daily Kos. That gives me some hope that maybe this whole ADD and ADHD thing is on the descent in this country. I hope so. Because it's just common sense. Nobody had ADD in the 1950s. Nobody had ADHD in the 1950s. I spoke to my parents about this. Both my parents are products of 1950s, 1960s America. And let me tell you something. No one had any idea what the hell ADHD was, or ADD. People did know what it meant to have a precocious little boy. And they did know what it meant to have a firm hand, sometimes literally, with some of these kids. They also knew that it was just all part of growing up, and it was necessary for kids to learn their boundaries, to learn what is appropriate, what is inappropriate, to learn how to live life without the aid of a pill. You know, I had a very good friend in high school. Sweet kid. Very, very nice person. He a genuinely good person. But he took pills for ADHD. And when he was off those pills, he really was almost a terror. For instance, after we were all in the local high school band, and when we were done with one game, we went to a local pizzeria to have a late night pizza and just, you know, hang out. A group of us, about six of us, were in the group, and my one friend didn't take his pills, and he was laughing louder than the rest of us. He was moving more than the rest of us, and eventually he ended up spilling some soda, slipping on it, and pushing his chair into a window and making a whole hell of a lot of noise. He didn't break through the window, thank Christ, but he did get us kicked out. Now, that being said, quite frankly, I saw nothing unusual about that. I just saw somebody who was immature.
I think this might be the case for all people with who take the pills, Craig.
Absolutely. This is what this goes back to what I said. I don't believe ADHD exists. I don't believe ADD exists. Not as a definable clinical illness. I don't believe it exists. And my friend is a great example of that, because he was immature. He was immature in many other ways as well. And you could tell that he had been treated differently as a little boy, that he hadn't had the firm hand that some other ones might have had. And he was just, as a result of that, and as a result of being coddled with Ritalin, I believe is what he took, he was immature. And that immaturity was exposed when he was not doped up with meds. Now, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I also had a friend in high school who took, Ritalin or some other med for his ADHD. And you could tell right away when he didn't take his meds, because he was, shaking almost. His legs, he would be, stomping his legs, drumming, even though he's not a drummer. He'd just be moving all the time. And when he took his meds, he'd be the most quiet person in the class. And it sort of was disconcerting to see him like that.
Yeah, it's two wrong extremes. You have the kid doped up, he's quiet, he's almost catatonic. You take the kid off the meds, and he doesn't know how to act, so he just acts out. He goes nuts. And people think, well, that's a disorder. No, it's just he never had the opportunity to get all that out of his system and to learn how to act in, a proper, civilized adult manner. You set the kid up to fail. And you also set the kid up to be an addict for the rest of his life for legal drugs.
Yeah. But they're legal, Craig. They're good for you.
They're good for you, yes.
That's what Novartis and all the other companies tell us, so it has to be true.
You know, I am just so sick and tired of Big Pharma. You know how the Democrats always talk about big oil or big business? They never talk about Big Pharma.
They're dirt fouls.
You know who else doesn't talk about You know who else doesn't talk about Big Pharma?
No, who?
Republicans.
Oh?
They never talk about it either.
Are they their pals too?
Absolutely. You know, it's
shocking.
It's the health industry in this country, both from the pharmaceutical aspect and from the food services aspect, is atrocious. Is scary. I recommend everybody watch a documentary. You can find it on Netflix called Food Inc. Kem Save, are you familiar with this documentary?
It's also on Amazon, the Amazon video service. It's on my list of videos to watch right now.
I recommend you watch it. It is horrifying. And frankly, I can usually see two sides of a situation, and I can normally guess at how a issue can be made to be viewed by the other side. I can't see how this documentary could be reworked to go from the side of the food companies. The documentary was about maybe five food services companies control 95% of everything that we ingest, from the meat to the vegetables, to the fruits, like everything is made from corn, and well, you hear this all the time in various other media, but people who talk like this are made to sound like idiots or radicals. But I recommend you all watch Food Inc. because it's just one half of the health destruction in America and the world by extension.
So yeah. Tyson and ConAgra aren't our friends, Craig?
No, they're not. Tyson, ConAgra, Cargill, they mentioned Monsanto. Some of our listeners in the audience will get a kick out of that. Purdue. Yeah, it's just, there's about five of them now. They control 75% of all meat consumed in this country. For instance, and oftentimes things that you think are even vegetables or other things tend to end up being corn or corn extract, high fructose corn syrup. That's just one half, and pharmaceutical malpractice is the other half of how this country is having its very existence controlled, altered, and made to fit the designs of a few people. And both parties are in on it. All modern presidents have been in on it. Well, possibly after Reagan. Bush, definitely. Both Bushes, Clinton and Obama, have definitely been in on it. I'm not so sure about Reagan. But we are reaching a point in this country where we're going to be facing a dire, dire future in terms of health and fitness because of issues revolving food availability and drug availability, drugs and illegal drugs. What?
You're missing part of the picture, because this is not just in America. This is happening in Europe too.
Absolutely, like, and it's my fault, and I thank you for calling me on that. America is only the beginning. America is the test bed, and once America is the way these companies and these people want it to be, Europe is going to follow. Asia is going to follow, and then the third world areas, Africa and South America, I'm gonna follow.
Because I follow the news and Polish news and stuff, and the European Union is pushing a whole lot of this crap too, like the corn chicken feed, and any type of agricultural actions that the Polish farmers do is looked at by the big wigs up at the European Union, and they're getting screwed again. They're getting screwed because they're like, oh yeah, you can't do this, you can't do that. You have to do it this way because this is how we do it in the European Union, because this is the right way. Your way is wrong. Our way is right, because Monsanto and all the other companies tell us it is.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The people that are in control of the European Union are the exact people who would be pushing this stuff in America as well. Now, the thing with Europe is that it has very traditional communities. Once you go outside the progressive, quote-unquote, capitals and big cities, you get into these rural areas of Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and then even the Nordic states and the Eastern European states, especially the Eastern European states. You have these traditional communities that still live in the technological age with technology and stuff and electronics, but the way they eat and the way they take care of their health are informed by tradition that dates back thousands of years, or at least 1,000 or hundreds of years. And they are much less inclined to adopt these consumerized, practices of medicating your kids or eating corn-fed beef or eating things that are not even chemically what they claim to be. Now, if the European Union goes full steam ahead and becomes the real United States of Europe, they may very well have that forced upon them.
Craig, that sort of sounds beautiful when you say it, but I was in Poland, and if you want to go to the store and get some type of sandwich meat or stuff, you can't get the good stuff anymore. You only get the water added hams, the ones that were smoked in that water smoking mixture, not the putting it into a smoker and smoking it for a few hours. Everything is going towards the way we have it here in America, where everything is fake. maybe in some, like, maybe some of the rural areas, but with the, starting with, like, with all the, like, supermarkets, big supermarkets coming into town, they're getting the same shit we have.
Absolutely.
It's the same crap.
Absolutely. No, don't get me wrong. Wherever you find a supermarket, you're going to find this highly processed, corn-based, highly marketed, and highly, quite frankly, dangerous food materials. You're absolutely right. I'm just saying, though, that you still have a significant amount of the population that, while they don't live outside of that world, they still have supermarkets and everything, they still have natural alternatives at some point.
Yes. I can attest to that, because their chicken actually tastes good.
Yeah.
My mom and my aunt cook pretty much the same way.
Okay.
And there's like a night and day difference between like the flavors, like in the beef and the chicken and the pork. It's like night and day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not nearly as far along, but you're absolutely right to clarify that they are on the road, and they are significantly down the road. But that being said, America is a much newer society. We don't have nearly as much history behind the way we live, and we have always been more willing to, quote-unquote, progress, go more into the future. And that could be a very bad thing for our health. Now, you know, we should do, like, for the holidays, we should do some pre-taped, like, specials on, like, the state of education and the state of food and health in America and the world, because we seem to really get jazzed up on these conversations, and we almost do a whole new show around them.
Yeah, we sort of